Last night, I was at a lovely and loving birthday celebration for two incredible humans, and I apologize if my voice is a little worse for wear this morning. Talking can do that, can't it? Anyway, I'm gonna talk some more, this time at you, and this time about A Christmas Carol, where Scrooge is still getting the living daylights frightened out of him. And he's currently in a bedchamber with an uncurtained bed, and something is covered up on the bed. What could it be? I guess we'll find out. The room was very dark, too dark to be observed with any accuracy, though Scrooge glanced round it in obedience to a secret impulse, anxious to know what kind of room it was. A pale light, rising in the outer air, fell straight upon the bed, and on it, plundered and bereft, unwatched, unwept, uncared for, was the body of this man. Scrooge glanced towards the phantom. Its steady hand was pointed to the head. The cover was so carelessly adjusted that the slightest raising of it, the motion of a finger upon Scrooge's part, would have disclosed the face. He thought of it, felt how easy it would be to do, and longed to do it, but had no more power to withdraw the veil than to dismiss the specter at his side. Oh, cold, cold, rigid, dreadful death! Set up thine altar here, and dress it with such terrors as thou hast at thy command, for this is thy dominion. But of the loved, revered, and honored head, thou canst not turn one hair to thy dread purposes, or make one feature odious. It is not that the hand is heavy and will fall down when released. It is not that the heart and pulse are still, but that the hand was open, generous, and true, and the heart brave, warm, and tender, and the pulse a man's. Strike, shadow, strike, and see his good deeds springing from the wound to sow the world with life immortal. No voice pronounced these words in Scrooge's ears, and yet he heard them when he looked upon the bed. He thought, if this man could be raised now, what would be his foremost thoughts? Avarice, hard-dealing, griping cares? They have brought him to a rich end, truly. He lay in the dark, empty house, with not a man, a woman, or a child to say that he was kind to me in this or that, and for the memory of one kind word I will be kind to him. A cat was tearing at the door, and there was a sound of gnawing rats beneath the hearthstone. What they wanted in the room of death, and why they were so restless and disturbed, Scrooge did not dare to think. "Spirit," he said, "this is a fearful place. In leaving it, I shall not leave its lesson, trust me. Let us go." Still the ghost pointed with an unmoved finger to the head. "I understand you," Scrooge returned, "and I would do it if I could, but I have not the power, spirit, I have not the power." Again, it seemed to look upon him. "If there is any person in this town who feels emotion caused by this man's death," said Scrooge, quite agonized, "show that person to me, spirit, I beseech you." The phantom spread its dark robe before him for a moment like a wing, and withdrawing it, revealed a room by daylight where a mother and her children were. She was expecting someone, and with an anxious eagerness, for she walked up and down the room, started at every sound, looked out from the window, glanced at the clock, tried, but in vain, to work with her needle, and could hardly bear the voices of the children in their play. At length, the long-expected knock was heard. She hurried to the door and met her husband, a man whose face was careworn and depressed, though he was young. There was a remarkable expression in it now, a kind of serious delight of which he felt ashamed, and which he struggled to repress. He sat down to the dinner that had been hoarding for him by the fire, and when she asked him faintly what news, which was not until after a long silence, he appeared embarrassed how to answer. "Is it good?" she said. "Or bad?" To help him.
"Bad,"
he answered. "We are quite ruined?"
"No."
"There is hope yet, Caroline." "If he relents," she said, amazed, "there is." "Nothing is past hope, if such a miracle has happened."
"He is past relenting," said her husband. "He is dead."
She was a mild, impatient creature, if her face spoke truth. But she was so thankful in her soul to hear it, and she said so, with clasped hands. She prayed forgiveness the next moment and was sorry, but the first was the emotion of her heart. "What the half-drunken woman, whom I told you of last night, said to me when I tried to see him and obtain a week's delay, and what I thought was a mere excuse to avoid me, turns out to have been quite true. He was not only very ill, but dying then."
"To whom will the debt be transferred?"
"I don't know, but before that time we shall be ready with the money. And even though we were not, it would be bad fortune indeed to find so merciless a creditor in his successor. We may sleep tonight with light hearts, Caroline."
"Yes."
Soften it as they would, their hearts were lighter. The children's faces, hushed and clustered round to hear what they so little understood, were brighter, and it was a happier house for this man's death. The only emotion that the ghost could show him, caused by the event, was one of pleasure.
"Let me see some tenderness connected with the death," said Scrooge, "or that dark chamber spirit, which we left just now, will be forever present to me."
The ghost conducted him through several streets familiar to his feet, and as they went along, Scrooge looked here and there to find himself, but nowhere was he to be seen. They entered poor Bob Cratchit's house, the dwelling he had visited before, and found the mother and the children seated round the fire. Quiet, very quiet. The noisy little Cratchits were as still as statues in one corner, and sat looking up at Peter, who had a book before him. The mother and her daughters were engaged in sewing, but surely they were very quiet.
"And he took a child and set him in the midst of them."
Where had Scrooge heard those words? He had not dreamed them. The boy must have read them out as he and the spirit crossed the threshold. Why did he not go on? The mother laid her work upon the table and put her hand up to her face.
"The color hurts my eyes," she said.
"The color?
Ah, poor Tiny Tim."
"They're better now again," said Cratchit's wife. "It makes them weak by candlelight, and I wouldn't show weak eyes to your father when he comes home for the world. It must be near his time."
"Past it, rather," Peter answered, shutting his book.
"But I think he has walked a little slower than he used these last few evenings, Mother."
They were very quiet again. At last she said, and in a steady, cheerful voice that only faltered once,
I have known him walk with Tiny Tim upon his shoulder very fast indeed."
"And so have I," cried Peter.
"Often."
"And so have I,"
exclaimed another.
So had all.
"But he was very light to carry," she resumed, intent upon her work. "And his father loved him so, that it was no trouble, no trouble. And there is your father at the door."
She hurried out to meet him. And little Bob and his comforter, he had need of it, poor fellow, came in. His tea was ready for him on the hob, and they all tried who should help him to it most. Then the two young Cratchits got upon his knees and laid, each child a little cheek against his face, as if they said,
"Don't mind it, Father. Don't be grieved."
Bob was very cheerful with them and spoke pleasantly to all the family. He looked at the work upon the table and praised the industry and speed of Mrs. Cratchit and the girls. "They would be done long before Sunday," he said.
Sunday. You went today then, Robert? She said.
Yes, my dear, returned Bob.
I wish you could have gone. It would have done you good to see how green a place it is. But you'll see it often. I promised him that I would walk there on a Sunday. My little, little child, cried Bob. My little child.
He broke down all at once. He couldn't help it. If he could have helped it, he and his child would have been farther apart, perhaps, than they were. He left the room and went upstairs to the room above, which was lighted cheerfully and hung with Christmas. There was a chair set close beside the child, and there were signs of someone having been there lately. Poor Bob sat down in it, and when he had thought a little and composed himself, he kissed the little face. He was reconciled to what had happened and went down again quite happy. They drew about the fire and talked, the girls and mother working still. Bob told them of the extraordinary kindness of Mr. Scrooge's nephew, whom he had scarcely seen but once, and who, meeting him in the street that day, and seeing that he looked a little, just a little down, you know, said Bob, inquired what had happened to distress him. On which, said Bob, for he is the pleasantest spoken gentleman you ever heard, I told him. I am heartily sorry for it, Mr. Cratchit, he said, and heartily sorry for your good wife. By the by, how he ever knew that, I don't know.
Knew what, my dear?
Why, that you were a good wife, replied Bob.
Everybody knows that, said Peter.
Very well observed, my boy, cried Bob. I hope they do. Heartily sorry, he said, for your good wife. If I can be of service to you in any way, he said, giving me his card, that's where I live. Pray, come to me. Now, it wasn't, cried Bob, for the sake of anything he might be able to do for us, so much as for his kind way, that this was quite delightful. It really seemed as if he had known our Tiny Tim and felt with us.
I'm sure he's a good soul, said Mrs. Cratchit.
You would be sure of it, my dear, returned Bob, if you saw and spoke to him. I shouldn't be at all surprised, mark what I say, if he got Peter a better situation.
Only hear that, Peter, said Mrs. Cratchit.
And then, cried one of the girls, Peter will be keeping company with someone and setting up for himself.
Get along with you, retorted Peter, grinning.
Editing Courtney, hopping in here to say, holy cow, this was hard to get through. Please bear with me.
It's just as likely as not, said Bob, one of these days. Though there's plenty of time for that, my dear. But however and whenever we part from one another, I am sure we shall none of us forget poor Tiny Tim, shall we? Or this first parting that there was among us.
Never, father, cried they all.
And I know, said Bob, I know, my dears, that when we recollect how patient and how mild he was, although he was a little, little child, we shall not quarrel easily among ourselves and forget poor Tiny Tim in doing it.
No, never, father, they all cried again.
I am very happy, said little Bob. I am very happy.
Mrs. Cratchit kissed him, his daughters kissed him, the two young Cratchits kissed him, and Peter and himself shook hands. Spirit of Tiny Tim, thy childish essence was from God.
Spectre, said Scrooge, something informs me that our parting moment is at hand. I know it, but I know not how.
Tell me what man that was whom we saw lying dead?
And like Scrooge, you'll have to wait until tomorrow to find out whose body it is lying in that bed curtainless bedchamber. Although, we all know, and so does Scrooge. Thank you for letting me into your ear holes to read you some of the very last we will read of A Christmas Carol. And thank you for bearing with me while I choked out the words about a family experiencing its first parting. Going through that right now. Pretty much all of you know that. it was hard to read. And I need a big cry, which is a good thing. Just ask Bob Cratchit. He knows the power of a good cry. Thank you for your ear holes once again. I love you all so very much. Please take good care of your hearts. And I'll talk to you tomorrow. Bye.